Dana Braja Janaranjana Jamuna Tira Banachari Jamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari
Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Paribhidaka Charja Astatara Satasi Srimadhyas Divine Grace Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shira Prabhupada Keed Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Keed Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Keed Samveda Bhaktavarinda Keed Nithai Gaur Pemanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 21 from Canto 5, Chapter 17. The descent of the river Ganges. Yamahur asya stati janma samyamam Tribir vihinam yam anantam rishayaha Naveda siddhartam eva kuchit stitam Bhumandalam Murdha Sahasra Dhamaso Yam Ahur Asya Siti Janma Jan Samyamam Tribir Vihinam Yam Anantam Rishayaha Naveda Siddhartam Eva Kvachit Stitam Bhumandalam Murdha Sahasra Dhamasu Tribir vihinam yam anantam rishayaha Naveda siddhartam eva kvachit stitam Umandalam murta sahasradamaso Yamahurasya stiti janva samyamam. Tribir vihinam yam ananta rishayaha. Naveda siddhartam ivakva chitstitam. Umandala murta sahasra dhamasu yam hum aho ho. They said, asya of the material world, stiti the maintenance, janma creation, samyamam annihilation, tribihi, these three, vihinam, without, yam, which, anantam, unlimited, rishayaha, all the great sages, na, not, veda, feels, siddha artam, a mustard seed. Iva, like. Kvachit, where. Stitam, situated. Bhumandalam, the universe. Murdha sahasra dhamasu, on the hundreds and thousands of hoods of the Lord. Translation, Lord Shiva continued, the great sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction, although he actually has nothing to do with these activities. Therefore, the Lord is called unlimited. Although the Lord in his incarnation as Shesha holds all the universes on his hoods, each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to him. Therefore, what person desiring perfection will not worship the Lord? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Shesha or Ananta, has unlimited strength, fame, wealth, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation, as described in this verse. Ananta's strength is so great that the innumerable universes rest on his hoods. He has the bodily features of a snake with thousands of hoods, and since his strength is unlimited, all the universes resting on his hoods feel no heavier than mustard seeds. We can just imagine how insignificant a mustard seed is on the hood of a serpent. In this connection, the reader is referred to Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila, chapter 5, verses 117 through 125. There, it is stated that Lord Vishnu's incarnation as the serpentine Anantashesha Nag supports all the universes on his hoods. By our calculation, a universe may be very, very heavy, but the Lord is Ananta, or unlimited. He feels the weight to be no heavier than a mustard seed. The reference in Adi Lila chapter 5 is in relation to Lord Nityananda, who is none different than Balaram, so Nityananda Ram, who manifests in five features. One of them is this one, and that's the reference describing Ananta or Ananta Shesha. Ananta means unlimited, and Shesha means basically paraphernalia. So he, the Lord, Ananta, manifest himself in various ways to serve the Lord, because this is Balaram's interest. He's interested in serving. He's really interested in serving. He's interested in serving in all the different rasas, and his capacity for service is unlimited. His desire for service is unlimited, and so he does it unlimitedly. The reference specifically is the Lord who is the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction. Although he actually has nothing to do with these activities. The next verse is referring to very specifically Mahavishnu as the, Garbhadaksha Vishnu as the source of Lord Brahma. So there's a number of nice things to say about this, the conclusion of which is, who will not worship him? Those who desire perfection will not worship him. Because I've been deeply involved in study of Sri Brahma Samhita, it's hard for me to not read this and contemplate it through the lens of Sri Brahma Samhita. And so I'm doing that. That's why I'm hesitating. It's a Bhagavatam class. But Sri Brahma Samhita is, in a synopsis form, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam in essentially sutras, codes, 62 verses, explains 18,000 verses, or encapsulates the message, not explains, but the message is within. Just take three examples from this verse. The sages accept the Lord as the source of creation, maintenance, and destruction, although he actually has nothing to do with these activities. That's stated twice in Brahma Samhita, that he has nothing to do with these activities. In text, the first several verses of Brahma Samhita are described, well, besides enunciating that Krishna is the source of everything, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarvakarana Karnam. So he's the cause of all causes. He's the cause of everything. Maintenance, that's where it starts. Stiti, Janma, maintenance, creation, and annihilation. He's the source of that. It then describes Krishna's abode, describes the features of Goloka Vrindavan, and it then mentions that, kind of like a transition verse is text 6, where it says, he has no association with his mundane potency. The Lord of Gokula is the transcendental Supreme Godhead. That term, Supreme Godhead, indicates the absolute truth, the fountainhead of everything, the source of everything, not just a controller, but the source of everything. And he's made up of his own potencies, that including his own ecstatic potency. He's self-sufficient, Swarat, he doesn't need anything from anybody. But he's the source of everybody and everything. He is the superior of all superiors and is busily engaged in the enjoyments of the transcendental realm and has no association with the mundane potency, which is what's being said here. Although he has actually nothing to do with these activities. The next verse says the same thing. Krishna never consorts with his illusory energy. So, although he never consorts with his illusory energy moves, if it moves, and when it moves, by his indication, and not otherwise. So, it's the sublime Achintabheda-Bheda-Tattva philosophy right away, and further elucidated as the section goes on. So he is the source of everything, although as far as the created realm is concerned, he has nothing to do with these activities. That is to say, they go on through his potencies. He personally is not involved. His potencies are involved. And his potencies move by his will. So he doesn't even have to do anything. He just has to think a thought or have an idea. And so he's not directly involved, although he's the source of everything. And therefore he is called unlimited. The word in the verse is anantam. And in the Bhagavatam, in Brahma Samhita, the same anantam is used in relation to the spiritual world. And in Bhakti Siddhanta's very special language, he calls this the infinitary aspect. We're not used to thinking of Sankarshan or Ananta or Balaram as the infinitary aspect. So he who is the source of everything is unlimited, and he acts in many ways, like in unlimited ways, through his infinitary aspect, his endless, unlimited aspect, who serves him all in so many different ways. So the way that's mentioned in the very beginning is he manifests the spiritual world. It's not like once upon a time there wasn't a spiritual world, and Krishna looked at his watch and said, gee, I think it's time for a spiritual world. And the infinitary aspect manifested the world, the spiritual world. It's eternal, as is Krishna eternal, and everything of the spiritual realm is eternal. Yet Krishna is acting through his expansion as Balaram, his infinitary aspect, an expansion of whom manifests the material world, an expansion of an expansion manifests the material world. Again, without having anything to do with it, just through his having a notion and glancing with that notion, and the whole thing happens, although he has nothing directly to do with it. That's Mahavishnu and the glancing, which is a third item, and that is it can be confusing sometimes. So I would like to speak a little bit to unconfuse the confusion that sometimes exists. If you use the measuring stick of rationality and try to decide, well, is this verse speaking about Krishna? Or is this verse speaking about Mahavishnu? Or is this verse speaking about Garbhadakshay Vishnu? And then you seem to get an idea, and then suddenly the kaleidoscope turns and the picture looks different, and then the kaleidoscope turns and the picture looks different, and it gets all, you know, one can get confused. So to unconfuse you, there's a term used in relation to Srimad Bhagavatam as well as in relation to Brahma Samhita that says there's a certain verse or sloka that sets the standard through which all the other verses of that text are to be understood. It's called the Paribhasya Sutra. Anything else that's said, if you don't understand that anything else, refer back to the initial sutra and understand it in terms of that original sutra. It defines that which is otherwise perhaps confusing. You see it through the Paribhasya Sutra. So for Brahma Samhita, it's the first verse, which connects to what's being presented here. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. So, just excuse me because I've been studying Brahma Samhita a lot, it's just going to come out. Krishna appears both in Vrindavan and outside of Vrindavan. Govinda only appears in Vrindavan. Govinda never leaves Vrindavan. We can say Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. That's Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. And specifically, Vrindavan is where Krishna tends the cows. Krishna doesn't tend cows in Mathura and Dwarka. He tends cows in Braja. Therefore, Brahma is honoring Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So they're different and non-different. Krishna has his feature in Mathura. He's Vasudev Krishna. And from Vasudev Krishna, there's in the spiritual world, Vasudev ends the Chaturvyuha. And the Chaturvyuha also exist in Mathura and Dwarka. And then there's Govinda, or that feature of Krishna, that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna that is always in Vrindavan and Vraja. And he is the source of everything. He's the source of everything. Anything you can think of, he's the source of that. And so... One of those things that he's the source of is creation, maintenance, and dissolution. But he's busy tending the cows. He doesn't go create universes. By his expansions create universes. So we can say his expansions create the universes. Or we can also say Krishna creates the universes, and they're both correct statements. Although he's just engaged in tending cows and in his lila, his other pastimes in Vrindavan. He's creating universes and maintaining them and annihilating them through his expansions. So different and non-different at the same time. But there's one source. And so one source you can say is doing everything, and you can also say the expansions are doing those things. And you can also say that none of them are doing either of them because they're doing through the agencies of their potencies. The point here is, without understanding the achintya bhed abhed philosophy or teaching of Lord Chaitanya, which is exquisitely presented in the Bhagavatam and in Sri Brahma Samhita and elucidated by your acharyas, everything becomes confusing. I mean, you can have a nice feeling about I should worship God, but those who, as the verse is saying, those who desire perfection will worship the original cause of all causes. And therefore, one will also worship those aspects of him which carry out the desires of him, recognizing it's all part of him. And these things are discussed in Brahma Samhita. So, references being made to Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila chapter 5. Eight verses, so I'm going to read those eight verses. Starting with text 117. So this is Krishna Das Kaviraj describing Lord Nityananda. First, he's described a little bit, 116 verses worth of describing Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Chiradakshaya Vishnu. And then he's going to now describe, he says, that Lord Vishnu is but a part of a plenary portion of Lord Nityananda, who is the source of all incarnations. So now, 117. That same Lord Vishnu, in the form of Lord Shesha, holds the planets upon his hoods, although he does not know where they are, for he cannot feel their existence upon his heads. Text 118. His thousands of extended hoods are adorned with dazzling jewels, surpassing the sun. Text 119. The universe, apparently that's this one, which measures 500 million yojanas in diameter, rests on one of his hoods like a mustard seed. We've got big hoods. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, one can only imagine what the sensation of a mustard seed on the hood of a serpent. But now he's the verse is going into the size. 500 million yojanas. One yojana equals 8 miles. So 500 million times 8 miles. 4 billion miles is the diameter of the universe. And the diameter of the universe rests, 8 billion miles rests like a mustard seed. So he's got a big body. Prabhupada mentions in the purport the name Sankarsana, quote unquote, has an entomological relationship with the idea of gravity. Did you know that? The scientist's law of gravity is a partial explanation of Lord Sankarsana's energy. It doesn't expand on it, what he's just making reference. In the purport, it makes reference to the verse that we're reading this morning, and then it makes reference to Chapter 25 of Canto 5, where it is said, Lord Anantadev has thousands of hoods. Each sustains a global sphere that appears like a grain of mustard. End of that purport. Text 121. That Anantashesh is a devotee incarnation of Godhead. He knows nothing but service to Lord Krishna. And a very intricate purport, three parts. Prabhupada quotes Krishna Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami. And I'll read it. Sri Anantadev has thousands of faces and is fully independent, always ready to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He waits upon him constantly. Sankarshan is the first expansion of Vasudev, and because he appears by his own will, he is called Swarat, fully independent. He is therefore infinite and transcendental to all limits of time and space. He himself appears as the thousand-headed Shesha. So Sankarshan expands. It's one of his fives. That's why it's being detailed here by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. But it's this Lord Nityananda has these different aspects. So the three Vishnus and Ananta is an expansion of Sankarshan. Then there's a reference to Skanda Purana where Indra is requesting Lakshmana. This is in reference to Ram's Leela. And Ram's Leela is over, and Indra, indicates, or you can say he instructs, he's standing before Lakshmana and says, please go to your eternal abode, Vishnuloka, where your expansion Shesha with his serpentine hoods is also present. Unquote. After thus dispatching Lakshmana to the region of Patala, Lord Indra returned to his abode. This quotation indicates that the Sankarshan of the quadruple form descends with Lord Rama's Lakshmana. When Lord Ram disappears, Shesha again separates himself from the personality of Lakshmana. Shesha then returns to his own abode in Patala region, and Lakshmana returns to his abode in Vaikuntha. I'll say it slower. When Ram appears to perform his pastimes, there's the Sankarshan, or the expansion of Sankarshan as Lakshmana in the spiritual world, who descends with Lord Ram, and from the Patala region, Shesha, who is an expansion of Sankarshan, doing this function down here, holding up the universes, he enters into and takes part in Ram's pastimes along with him. When the pastimes are over, they separate. Shesha goes back to the Patala region. Lakshmana goes back to Ayodhya. And there's a number of examples like that. They can be confusing if you don't understand the science of the Lord is unlimited and he can do all these things, no problem. But if you think he's limited like we're limited, then your head will spin. Another nice example from the Bhagavatam is Pradyumna. Another one of the Chaturvyuha personalities, like Sankarshan. And you read the chapter dealing with the marriage of how Pradyumna was born, and it's very confusing unless you like read what our acharyas have to say about it. Anyway, there's an expansion of Pradyumna. An expansion of Pradyumna that it appears as Cupid in the heavenly realm. He's an expansion, a partial expansion. And he merges with, when Pradyumna makes his appearance in Krishna's pastimes with him, and when the pastimes are over, he separates out again. The Supreme Lord is unlimited in his capacity, and so one needs the help of scripture and our acharyas to understand all these things. So therefore we're getting this. Shesha has this relationship with Sankarshan as an expansion of Sankarshan, and he performs functions in this realm. And here is the next part from Lagu Bhagavatamrita by Rupa Goswami. It's a book that's describing, Lagu Bhagavatamrita is a fascinating book that describes the avatars. That's what the book does. Like chapter 3 of Canto 1, it says it five times in different ways. So in this particular section, he is describing Shesha in Lagu Bhagavatamrita as follows. The Sankarshan of the second group of quadruple forms appears as Ram taking with him Shesha, who bears the global spheres. There are two features of Shesha. One is the bearer of the globes. The other is the bedstead servitor. So one is in the spiritual, the other's in the material realm. The Shesha who bears the globes is a potent incarnation of Sankarshan, and therefore he is sometimes called Sankarshan. The bedstead feature of Shesha always presents himself as an eternal servitor of the Lord. So, like Akura, when Akura saw the spiritual world, there was Vishnu lying on Shesha. That's the spiritual world. He saw the spiritual world, and he's the bedstead of the Supreme Lord in the spiritual world. But then there's an expansion that's also of the name Sankarshan, but specifically it's Shesha who holds the planets on his hoods. And they're none different and different. If you want them to be different and not non-different, or non-different but not different, you're going to have a problem. Because they're both. And the verse, so it goes on, but the verse that we're reading says, who will not worship him? There's just a few more verses, no purports. With his thousands of mouths, he sings the glories of Lord Krishna. But although he always sings in that way, he does not find an end to the qualities of the Lord. The four Kumaras hear Srimad Bhagavatam from his lips. Do you ever wonder how the Kumara Sampradaya begins? Like ours is the Brahma Sampradaya, where Lord Brahma has the knowledge of the Vedas imparted within his heart. The Kumaras are his sons, hear it from Anantashesh. That's how their Sampradaya begins. And they in turn repeat it in the transcendental bliss of love of Godhead. He serves Lord Krishna assuming the following forms: umbrella, slippers, bedding, pillows, garments, resting chair, residence, sacred thread, and throne. That's like, you know, the bedstead, Sankarshan. Then there's the one that holds the planets. He is thus called Lord Shesha, for he has attained the ultimate end, because Shesha means paraphernalia. He's the paraphernalia. He manifests in that way. For he has attained the ultimate end of servitude to Krishna. He takes many forms for the service of Krishna, and thus he serves the Lord. That person of whom Lord Ananta is a kala, or a part of a plenary part, is Lord Nityananda, who therefore can know the pastimes of Lord Nityananda. So back to the verse. Lord Shiva is describing this Supreme Lord who he's like very excited to describe his glories and unlimitedness, and therefore wants to worship him and wishes that everyone would worship him, and can't understand how those who wish perfection will not worship him. Although the Lord in his incarnation as Shesha holds all the universes on his hoods, each universe feels no heavier than a mustard seed to him. So there's two ways or combination. One is his strength is unlimited. Another is by his mystic power, he can make something heavy light. Or combination. Like when Krishna was lifting Govardhan Hill, it was very light. Govardhan was feeling ecstatic. And when you feel ecstatic, you feel lighter. He was terribly ecstatic and he was very light. At the same time, Krishna's strength is unlimited. So even if he wasn't light, he was heavy. Krishna's strength is unlimited. But part of his unlimitedness is he can make something heavy light. Either way, or combination. Who will not worship him? Especially considering that the tendency to worship is intrinsic to the soul. If we don't have faith in Krishna, we'll have faith in something. If we don't worship Krishna, we'll worship something, according to the modes of nature. The people in the mode of goodness, they worship the demigods, and the people in the mode of passion, they worship, you know, rock stars and sports heroes and politicians and, you know, worldly people. They worship somebody. And then, you know, those in the mode of ignorance, they worship ghosts and spirits. So if you don't worship Krishna, you're going to worship something. And they can say, oh, no, I don't worship. But, you know, the scientists, they worship the puffy-buffy scientist that says, you know, God is dead. They worship him. They don't do it the same way that we do it. They do it in a different way. Within the messages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, like this verse, there is immense potency. And one who receives these potencies in an unadulterated fashion, meaning coming into cyclic succession, then those immense potencies act to cleanse the heart and to give direction to the otherwise misguided intelligence. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who studies the sacred conversation worships me with his intelligence, which means the intelligence is becoming purified. The intelligence is that factor which discriminates. Is this worshipable? Is the Supreme Lord worshipable? Well, we have our doubting tendencies. We have our all kinds of things going on. But if we continue to hear thoughtfully, not blindly, but very carefully considering, then these potencies will act to cleanse, to guide, to shape our heart and our feelings and our regard properly. Srimad Bhagavatam is such a wonderful literature. Okay, I think I'll stop there and see if there's any discussion.
Balaram's position is unique in that he's God, but he has a mode of service towards God. And then everyone else or others who are in Krishna's pastimes and so on, they're like Shaktis who have a worship God. So that makes sense. So I've always been, we call Krishna as the, like Sevaka Bhagavan Prabhupada says, the form of God to be served. And Balaram's servitor Godhead.
Mm.
And I've never been very clear about this. I mean, it's interesting that he's God, but he's in a mood of service toward God, which is it's a little bit different than, like, his Shakti's being in a mood of service toward him. So I don't know if you, I was, because then we're hearing about Shesha and all these expansions, so they all have this mood of service towards Krishna. And
that's it.
Yeah.
And there's nothing else. Although, it, you know, it starts in the purport saying he's unlimited in his, you know, strength, knowledge, beauty. He's Bhagavan. He's unlimited. He's has all the opulences of Bhagavan. He's also Bhagavan. And the aspect of him is this mood of service. That's the whole message of chapter 5 of Adi Lila. His mood of service. So, why not? I mean, don't struggle with it, just accept it. Why not? He's a servitor mood. And all of us that have servitor tendency, at least, you know, constitutionally servitor tendency, we derive that from him. Now, your point is, well, that's okay, we're Shakti, but he's not Shakti, he's Purusha. He's Purusha. But Purusha has Shakti. We're Shakti, you know, we're energies of the he who is likes to serve. And there's a relationship between the energy and the energetic who likes to serve. The relationship is we're his energy. We're assisting him in his mode of service. And, you know, the picture is it's complete. There is one source of everything, and that everything is complete. There's the served, and there's the servitors. And it's the servitors aren't just Shaktis, it's his own expansion. It's complete. You could say, well, that doesn't make sense. Okay, then the converse is, without it, it's not complete. That's the spiritual world. It's complete. And he's acting in the material world, too. The infinitary aspect. Within the creation, this is a detail from Brahma Samhita. Not also for the creation, of course, the energies are there, but the energetic has to activate the energies. Mahavishnu glances, and then Pradhan manifests, and then the seeds of the universe enter into that Mahatattva. But then the elements start to congeal around those seeds, but they're not forming universes yet. This is third canto Bhagavatam, by the way, it's in chapter 5, end of chapter 5. And so the sadhyas, they're called, primordial demigods, the prototype demigods, they pray to Mahavishnu, saying, you know, we can't get it together. Help. And so he expands again. This is, you know, the three Vishnus are part of the expansions of Balaram and Sankarshan and Sesha, the other two. Shiradakshai Vishnu enters within the elements. And along with the time energy, what's the word? Uh, I guess the word is combines. It's a combining potency of Shiradakshai Vishnu. Then they can cooperate, and the universe. So, at every step, there is Balaram, even here, or there. And there's energies connected, and here or there. He manifests the spiritual world. He manifests the material world. And there's energies there, and there's energies here. Spiritual and material energies. It's all about service to Krishna. You know, some misguided and some properly guided. It's complete. Something else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. There are two questions which came up in a discussion. One was, someone asked, what is the meaning of a plenary portion?
What is the meaning of?
A plenary portion.
Okay.
And the second is, they heard somewhere that Subhadra Maharani is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. Is that true?
Okay, let's do the first one. What's the meaning of plenary portion? So plenary means complete, and portion means like not complete. Something, plenary portion. Think of, one way to explain it is think of the 64 qualities of Krishna, which Vishnu has 60 of. Right? So, there's a uniqueness to Krishna that Vishnu doesn't have. But their potency is full. The potency is full, just as we heard. Bhagavan, full, unlimited. Six opulences, and that's Shesha. Vishnu, potencies are full, but so that's plenary. And the portion is, it's not that there's four qualities that Krishna has that are. And another way is, he's the source. Vishnu is not the original source of, he's not the sarva karana karanam. He's one of the karanas, but he's not the sarva karana karanam. Svangsa in Sanskrit, or plenary portion. To take it out of, you know, put it in contact with something that we experience during the month of Kartik. There's a lamp on the Krishna Balaram's altar, and they take the lamp and bring it out in front, and then from that lamp they light all the lamps that people go and, you know, offer to Damodar. So all the lamps, they're plenary of the original lamp. But one is the original lamp, and all of them are not the original lamp. Plenary portion of the original lamp. Then add to it that Krishna has qualities for that Vishnu doesn't have. There's the portion part, but plenary portion. And Krishna is the cause of all causes. Vishnu is the plenary portion. And the other question is, Subhadra is an expansion of Radharani. It goes like this. It's a little subtle. So Subhadra is the manifestation of the Lord's Yogamaya potency. The Yogamaya potency is an aspect of Krishna. Because everything is an aspect of Krishna. The Yogamaya potency is an aspect of Krishna. It's his potency for conducting his pastimes. Subhadra is that Yogamaya potency in Dwarka. She's known by other names in other places. Purnamasi in Breja. And other names in other places. Protamaya in Navadvip. But it's that Krishna's Yogamaya potency. So the Yogamaya potency is part of. So now it gets a little like, so you can say it this way, you can say it that way, kind of a detail. Radharani is the part of the internal potency of which there are three divisions. Samvit, Sandini, and Ladini. She's the Ladini portion of the internal potency, sometimes Antaranga Shakti, sometimes Chit Shakti. Radharani is a part of that, the internal potency. And the internal potency is being conducted through the agency of or under the guidance and direction of the Yogamaya potency. It's not like, okay, there's three, Sandini, Sambit, Ladini, and then there's, you know, the superior who they're answering to. It's not exactly like that. It's how to say it exactly. It's not exactly that. Here's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in his description of, where it is, the various potencies of Krishna are said to be inconceivable, especially the spiritual potencies. In one of these sessions where Bhaktivinoda is explaining things, the person who is explaining to ask the question, well, this sounds very reasonable. How come you call it inconceivable? Sounds very conceivable. And he answers that question by saying, when the potencies mix, you can't discern them as we've just explained. We've displayed them for sake of analysis, but when they're moving, you don't see, okay, there's this potency personified, that potency personified, and they're having a conversation, and they make a plan, and then they go off and do something. But it's not quite like that. It's inconceivable. So with that inconceivable, achintya shakti notion, there's three answering to Yogamaya. They're working together. And ultimately, Krishna is the controller of the whole show, although sometimes even the Yogamaya potency covers Krishna. Krishna becomes bewildered. And Purnamasi has to come and sort it out. The Yogamaya potency is that potency by which the three potencies are acting. It's like coordinating factor of those three Sandini, Samvit, Ladini potency for the purpose of Krishna's pleasure, including how that potency acts to delude the conditioned soul. Just as an example, the birth of Krishna. The seventh child is in the womb of Devaki. Krishna calls Yogamaya and gives her some service. And she does her service, and then she becomes Durga. All by Krishna's arrangement. Now, back to your question. Is Subhadra an expansion of Radharani? That's your question. Subhadra is the Yogamaya potency as the affairs of Krishna, the leelas of Krishna are being enacted in Dwarka. So, not exactly an expansion of Radharani. Radharani is the Ladini Shakti, and Radharani in Dwarka is Satyabhama. And Chandravali is Rukmini. And Yogamaya is Subhadra. Listen to this. The conclusion is not exactly. At the end of Vidugdha Madhava, Lalita Madhava. Lalita Madhava is Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. Rupa Goswami's writing Lalita Madhava ends this way. Satyabhama realizes she's actually Radharani, and Krishna realizes he's actually Govinda, and they get married in Dwarka. And Radharani asks for two benedictions. Krishna says, "You please me very much, take some benedictions." And he gives her two. She asks for two. Please Please continue to engage myself and the gopis in your loving pastimes. And gopis, they're in Dwarka. And then something about compassion, be compassionate upon all souls, something like that. And then there's a question that's raised, now how can this be taking place in Dwarka? And the internal potency, not in this case Subhadra, there's another name, but it's the same potency, starts with an E, Ekanungsa, something like that. And she comes on stage and draws back the curtain and shows they're actually in Vrindavan. That's how it ends. There's Radharani, and there's the Yogamaya potency drawing back the curtain. They're actually in Vrindavan, although it looks like Dwarka. Or it looked like Dwarka until she pulled back the curtain and she laughs. So not exactly. Anything else? Yes.
A question on Bhagavad Gita, chapter 15, text 18, purport about Paramatma. Prabhupada is quoting the Chandogya Upanishad.
Can you get me a Bhagavad Gita? Go ahead, keep reading.
So the translation from the verse is, the super soul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyoti.
Before you can tell me what the verse and number is?
Chapter 15.
15.
15, yes. And text 18.
15, 18, okay.
Last paragraph in the purport.
Last paragraph of the purport. Okay.
The translation of the of a verse from the Chandogya Upanishad.
Okay.
So that part, the super soul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyotir, then in his form he remains in his spiritual identity. That supreme is called the supreme personality. So my question is, what is that form of the...
Well, let's read the rest. Could you follow what he said? I'll read it. There's a quote from Chandogya Upanishad. The paragraph starts, the Supreme Lord, in his localized aspect of Paramatma, is also described in the Vedas themselves. Chandogya Upanishad, quote, "The supersoul coming out of the body enters the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, semicolon. Then in his form, he remains in his spiritual identity. That supreme is called the Supreme Personality," unquote. This means that the Supreme Personality is exhibiting and diffusing his spiritual effulgence, which is the ultimate illumination. That Supreme Personality also has a localized aspect as Paramatma. By incarnating himself as the son of Satyavati and Parashara, that's Vyasadeva, he explained the Vedic knowledge as Vyasadeva. So, what is it? You want me to unpack that and explain what's being said here?
Yes, there are different questions. Like, one is which form he's in.
So there's Bhagavan, there's Paramatma, and there's Brahman. And the Brahma Jyoti is from Bhagavan. It's an aspect of the Absolute Truth, the effulgence of the Absolute Truth, the impersonal feature of the Absolute Truth, resting upon, you know, from chapter 14, it's resting upon Krishna. Correct?
Yes.
And then there's the Paramatma feature. And the Paramatma feature, while, I mean, it's not totally clear to me, but the supersoul coming out of the body. Now, which is the body that is coming out of? Maybe it means like, you know, one of ours and the body's finished and it comes out of the body. Maybe that's what it means. Could mean something else. But it's just describing a relationship. The relationship of Bhagavan has his plenary portions, which he expands as, one of which is Paramatma. And Paramatma is resting in the Brahma Jyoti. And Krishna is the basis of both. That's what it means. Krishna is the basis and support of both. So that form is his original form. The reference. He has original form. Okay?
Yes, that's a general understanding.
I don't understand your... Speak clearly what your question is.
I understand what you are saying.
But?
But, for example, Shirodha Kasai Vishnu is also in Swetadvip. That's correct?
Sure, he has a number of residences. That's one. That's his primary one.
And we can understand that Vishnu in Swetadvip is also Paramatma. And
did you get it?
A form.
Yeah. But please don't restrict He Who Is Unlimited and say that's it. He can't be anywhere else. Yeah, okay.
Now, I was thinking first that form of Paramatma may be the form of Paramatma represented as Vishnu in Swetadvip, which this verse therefore create a confusion.
I wish I could understand clearly what it is that you're struggling with, because I don't understand what it is that you're struggling with, so it's hard for me to address it.
The form of Paramatma I'm struggling with is that form in Swetadvip is a form of Paramatma, and why here in this verse it is explained that the form of coming out of the body, he said, then in his form, he remains in his spiritual identity. That spiritual identity of Paramatma is confusing.
Well, he has an eternal spiritual identity. Sometimes, you know, this is a chronological thing. Sometimes he appears within a body, and then sometimes he leaves the body, but he has his spiritual form, regardless of where he's situated.
Yeah, but the material, there is not a material form for Paramatma.
No, but he may be situated within one.
Within a material body.
Yeah. He can be situated within an atom, then the atom is put, and then what's he going to do? He's not dependent upon it. He can take his residence elsewhere. But ultimately, it's in the Brahma Jyoti, because he's in the spiritual sky.
Okay. So he has multiple identities, Paramatma.
Just like when you're in a cloud, you're in an airplane, zoom, 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 you're in a cloud. You look out the window, there's the clouds. But although you're in the clouds, you're in the sky. So when you leave the cloud, you're in the sky. So similarly, Paramatma is transcendentally situated. He may be apparently within a body, or within an atom, or wherever he might be. And when that temporary situation is finished, he has his own form and he's in the spiritual sky. And he has his relationship with, as a portion of a plenary portion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. That's all. But I don't think it's saying anything more than that.
Okay, thanks, Maharaj.
I think it's a language issue, and you're looking at the language and trying to, like, how does this fit together with that? But if you step back from the language, and it's not saying any more than what I just described. The language may be a little tricky, or, like, you know, hard to discern.
Yes, also in Spanish we had the translation used to be before Paramatma manifested out of the body. And so I didn't understand that passage as when the jiva is, it's leaving the material body. But I was understanding a manifestation of Paramatma outside the body. So, but then when I read this in English,
when he's in Svetadvipa, he's not in any body. But he who's in Svetadvipa can simultaneously be within a body. And then the body's finished and he's in Svetadvipa. He has his form.
And in the body, he has the form that second canto explained. He has the form, arms, and.
Yeah.
Paramatma leaves the body when the jiva is liberated?
I've never heard it explained that way exactly, but perhaps that's a way to explain it. I've heard it explained this way. The living entity has an eternal relationship with Krishna. When the living entity, in those circumstances where the rebellious living entity wishes to have a separate existence from Krishna, which is not possible, he enters into the heart of that living entity, so the living entity can't see him, but he's always with him. And when the living entity turns his attention again to the Supreme Lord and returns to the spiritual world, that expansion is no longer required, exactly like, you know, the technology of what happens at that particular point. I've never heard it described. But the attention goes to the two-armed form of Krishna, at least for followers of Lord Chaitanya. That's what happens. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.